Yeah! Welcome to the Compass Podcast, featuring Chris Chandro and the Compass team. We hope this message is just for you.
This is one of those times of the year where it's post-Christmas and everyone's just kind of catching their breath and preparing for what's coming up in the next year. For me, this is kind of that middle period between Christmas and New Year's, and I always think of this as the Christmas hangover, right? Because you've been planning for Christmas, and just weeks and months of thinking and preparations have gone into the fact that Christmas is coming. Some of you guys went and you were buying presents this summer. I mean, you've been thinking about what you were going to get people all year long, and so everything just builds up to this one Christmas event, and it's just like so fraught with family, and it's just fraught with, you know, thinking about, am I going to have given the best gifts that I possibly can, and everybody's schedule is packed and full, and it's just seeing everyone, seeing friends, and it's just, ah, Christmas. And then all of a sudden when Christmas is over, it's just like, oh, what just happened? You know what I mean? And so you can be left with this, like for me, it is definitely a Christmas hangover where it's all I want to do is I just want to lay in bed. I don't want to do anything. I don't want to see anybody. Like, I know some of my family is here. I'm sorry. I don't care if I see you guys again for like another 6 months because I'm just that done with the... I didn't mean that. Mom, I love you. But... But seriously, Christmas, it just builds to this amazing, just climactic Christmas. And then when Christmas is over, it's like, well, what next? And I think what's interesting is that we're kind of wired this way, that once that big climactic thing happens, there's just this kind of a letdown. In fact, some psychologists have studied this after Christmas effect, and what they found is that our bodies are physically wired to where the endorphins and the chemicals in us that keep us up and keep us energized and keep us excited during the Christmas season are literally tied to that season. And that when the external stimulus of Christmas is gone, our bodies physically cannot sustain that high anymore until everything just drops. It's interesting too how statistically the most depressed time of the entire year in America is the time between now and a couple weeks into January. This is the time where people are at their lowest, at their most depressed. And I attribute that to the Christmas hangover. Everything's great, and then all of a sudden, things just hit this slow down speed bump. A couple years ago, we had a major after Christmas speed bump. And our kids were very little. We lived in Kansas City at the time. And we drove back here to Illinois for Christmas. And, you know, having little kids, Calvin might have been two, so we would have had a two-year-old, a three-year-old, and a five-year-old. So our kids were very small. And, when you know, if you have little kids, you know this, that little kids get all the biggest and best presents because they're just adorable, and grandmas and aunts and uncles and grandpas all want to just buy them the best stuff. And so we had three of the little ones, and we, no joke, our minivan, was packed to the gills. Our kids had no space to move around at all because it was just packed. It was the type of deal where you're holding stuff in and trying to close the door at the same time, just hoping you don't smash it in the door, is how full our minivan was with all the presents that our kids had. And so we got loaded, we're in the car, and it's like, okay, Christmas is over, we did it. We're going home with all these amazing gifts. What a great visit, what a great holiday season. This has been great. And we just start driving. Well, we take a route to Kansas City. That goes through some of the back roads of Illinois because, you know, I'm the type of guy who I want to go the fastest route possible. And I don't care if it's, you know, if the time says it's less, I want to go the fewest miles because I'm going to make up that time by speeding. And so we go through this back roads of Illinois way to get to Kansas City, and it takes us through all these little bitty towns. And so, you know, we'll drive 20 miles just on road and then hit this town where 500 people live, you know, another 20 miles and then hit a town where 200 people live. And then we hit this one town called Curryville. Now, apparently, the police in Curryville have made it a huge habit of stopping people who do not live in Curryville and giving them speeding tickets. So just for the record, if you ever pass through there, watch your speed. I was not watching my speed. And so I was probably going 45 and a 30 as we were leaving town. And I see the rotating lights, boop, you know, pulling up behind me. I'm like, stink. So I pull over and I stop. And inevitably, we have the kids in the back. And like, Daddy, what's going on? Daddy, what's going on? I'm like, it's the police. It's the police. And I'm like, guys, it's okay. Dad just did something stupid. I was speeding and I shouldn't have been. Just relax. It's okay. And so I pull over to the side thinking this, I'll take my ticket and we'll just go, you know, this will be over soon. So we stop and the officer comes up and he's a little salty because it's the end of the holidays and he's working. I don't know, but he comes up and he's just, you know, it's not even like a smile on his face. It's like, license registration, please. So I hand him my license registration. I'm like, sir, I'm sorry. I know I was speeding. You got me. I apologize. He's like, wait here. He goes back to his car. He's there for like 2-3 minutes. He's there for 5 minutes. He's there for 10 minutes. I'm like looking at the camera, I'm like, what is going on? What is happening here? 15 minutes later, he comes back to the car. I knew I'd been busted speeding, so I didn't know what was going on. He comes back and he says, sir, he said, did you know that your license plate is expired? I said, rats. No, I didn't. Shoot, I'm really sorry about that. It expired in November, like the month before. I was like, stink, I'll have to get that fixed. If you got anything to take for that, I understand. He said, okay. And did you know that the proof of insurance you gave me is also expired? I was like, I did what any, you know, self-respecting man would do. And I said, well, sir, I apologize. This is my wife's vehicle. It really is her responsibility to make sure that that stuff is taken care of in the vehicle. But, you know, we have insurance. You know, I apologize. We have it. You know, whatever you got to do, I understand. And he says, okay, well, hold on 1 second. He goes back. We wait 5 minutes. Wait 10 minutes. Wait 15 minutes. It is. We have been sitting there for half an hour at this point. We have a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 5-year-old in the back with no room. They're starting to get fussy. They're starting to get whiny. I'm starting to get angry and, you know, getting that steam. And, like, of course, there's like that type of deal where my wife is sitting next to me going, shouldn't have been speeding. I told you. I'm like, oh. He comes back. I already know I'm busted for the license plate. I know I'm busted for the insurance. I know I'm busted for speeding. And he says, sir, what is your address? And I said, well, we were driving back home to Kansas City. And he's like, because I see that you have an Illinois driver's license. How long have you lived in Missouri? About 6 months. Okay, well, sir, you know, once you move to a town, you have 90 days to get a new license. And so this license is invalid. And I was like, you know what? I apologize for that. As soon as we get home, I'll get a new license. He said, sir, there's another thing. Your driver's license is suspended here in the state of Illinois. I was like, wait, what? He says, yeah, it's saying that your license is invalid. And I'm like, I said, I have no idea why. Does it say why? He just doesn't say that, sir. And this is where things start to turn, right? Because now it's the point where he's just not just a cop who's, you know, getting a ticket and he's put out that I'm here. For some reason, I have personally offended this man. Like, my very existence is an affront to him. And he said, you know what I should do, sir, right now? I should take you out of this van and I should take you to jail right now. I was like, I hope you don't do that, sir. That would be an inconvenience to my wife and children who are in the back. And he says, well, I should because your license is expired. I said, well, can I try to figure this out? Because I know my license should not be suspended. I'm pretty confident that I would know if there's, I don't have any tickets or anything. This shouldn't be suspended. And he says, you know what? Let me go check. So he goes back out to his car. I get on the cell phone. It's like December 27th. I'm calling the state of Illinois, trying to get the DMV on the phone. And I'm talking to someone and I'm like, it says my license is suspended. She says, well, our records don't show it's suspended. And she said, well, wait a minute, let me look. I said, okay, well, I see that there was a ticket a long time ago that was taken off of your record. But oh, wait, you know what? It didn't get taken off your record. So yeah, it looks like because of that, you got suspended. She's like, I'm not sure why you didn't get notified. And I said, well, I don't live in Illinois anymore. She said, well, okay, you know what? I can take care of this. I'll make sure you don't get suspended. Cop comes back. I'm like, sir, DMV says that I'm not suspended. Will you talk to them? No, I'm not going to talk to them. I'm like, sir, she's right there. Talk to them. I don't know that that's them. Like, you can't prove that that's the DMV I'm talking to. You know, it's just got to be right in my system before I can let you go. So literally, I think that what's going to happen is that he has to take me to county jail and send my children home. And I'm going to go to jail for speeding, not having proof of insurance, having an invalid license plate, having a suspended driver's license that also has the benefit of being an invalid driver's license because it is not my current address. Not to mention the fact that there's an angry police officer that clearly does not have any young children because he is not moved by the fact at all that there is no room in our van to change a single diaper when one of my kids poops their pants, which I know is coming. So he comes back in and I'm trying to explain everything to him, saying, look, this is not suspended. It's all good. And he just reaches the point where he says, you know, it's fine. I'm going to let you go. But you're going to have to come back here to court to take care of this. And he writes off the 5 tickets and he staples them together and he gives them to me. And he says, I'll see you in a month. I roll my window up and I start driving away full of Christmas cheer. happy that Jesus came as a baby for me. No, that is not what I was full of. I was full of anger and bitterness and rage. And, you know, some of you guys who have ever seen, you know, Dad mad in the car, maybe when you were a kid, you know what it was like. It was that moment of just silence. And it was that type of moment where Mom, she's like, guys, just be quiet. Just be quiet. Nobody say anything. Shh, kids, just shh, shh. Dad needs quiet. That's Terry in that moment, even while she's going, you shouldn't have been speeding. So, but for a lot of us, though, those after Christmas moments, that was probably our worst Christmas letdown, and we've had a lot. But that was probably the worst, where it was just like Christmas high, and then all of a sudden real life just punches you in the face. And we've all had that. Every single one of us knows the feeling. Maybe for you it's a big thing like that, you know, but maybe for you it's just, you know, you're going to go home today after Compass, and your living room floor is covered with wrapping paper, you know, appendages and, you know, ripped sheets of tape. And you know, there's boxes of gifts that you have to return because nobody knows what you like because nobody loves you enough. And it's just, you know, just all of these things that come after Christmas. Maybe for you, you're dealing with the fallout of, you know, different family situations that happened after the holidays. You know, maybe there was one of those inevitable, you get the family together and there's the family fight, the family blow up. Maybe, you know, Uncle Jack always gets drunk at Christmas and says something stupid, and then all of a sudden just, you know, someone starts talking about President Obama, and then someone starts talking about, well, what about George W. Bush? And all of a sudden it's just a melee. And this, the fallout of that is you're carrying it with you right now. Maybe your Christmas hangover is you've got through the holidays, and maybe there was someone who wasn't at Christmas this year because of a family breakup, a marriage breakup, maybe someone you cared about and loved passed away. But whatever it is, we all in some ways face this Christmas hangover where after Christmas, after the big high of the holidays, real life sets in. And you know, the Bible tells us the story of Jesus when he came to, and he was born as a baby, the Christmas story. The Christmas story doesn't actually end at the manger with the stars and the angels and the shepherds. The Christmas story goes on in very much the same way that our lives go on after Christmas. And so today I want to talk to you about the backside of the Christmas story, the part of the Christmas story that maybe we aren't told very often or that we don't think about or read very often. And so this happens immediately after all, you know, the Jesus-y stuff. Jesus comes, angels, shepherds, wise men, just, you know, savior of the world, and just the beautiful joy of Christmas story, right? And then we pick up and we find Joseph and Mary in Matthew chapter 2. And it says this, after the wise men were gone. So after everything is over, the Christmas season for Mary and Joseph, the first Christmas ever, it's after. The day after they're gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. Get up, flee to Egypt with the child and his mother, the angel said. Stay there until I tell you to return, because Herod is going to search for the child to kill him. That night, Joseph left for Egypt with the child and Mary, his mother, and they stayed there until Herod's death. So here's the background. Jesus was born at a time where there was a Jewish king named Herod. The prophecies in the Old Testament and Jewish prophecy had said that this Messiah was going to be born, and he was going to be a king to his people, and he was going to set up this new government, and he would lead the people of Israel. And so the understanding of what the Messiah was that he was going to come and be a ruler, a physical king. So Herod is king right now, and Herod hears these rumors from these wise men and this star up in the sky that this Messiah is coming, this baby's going to be born. And all Herod can think is that, okay, this baby's a threat to me, it's a threat to my power and a threat to my control. And so Herod, not having any control of the situation, decides this: if I'm going to maintain my leadership as king, and if I'm going to maintain the legacy for my children to continue to be king after me over and over and over again, then I have to deal with this. So Herod makes the drastic decision that he is going to go and find every baby that was born in the area of Bethlehem, where it was prophesied that this Messiah was going to be born, and in fact, where Jesus was born, that he was going to have every baby who was born in and around Bethlehem, in and around that time frame, he was going to go have them all killed. Huge, drastic, horrible, I mean a horrible measure that he's willing to go to maintain his power. And the same angel that appears to Mary and Joseph and it says, fear not, do not be afraid because God is with you. You know, you're going to give birth to a son. The same angel that showed up and said, don't be afraid, now shows up to Joseph and says this, you need to get up and you need to run because someone is going to come and try to kill you and he's going to come and try to kill your child. So here's, I mean, picture this. I mean, if you're Joseph and Mary, right, you've gone through the whole process of dealing with the fact that you guys are not married, that Mary's a teenager, that she's saying she's pregnant and it's not your baby, and, you know, all of this stuff. You've gone through all of that to the birth of Jesus. The baby is here. You've been told that he's the Son of God, that this is a miracle baby who is going to save the world. At that point, wouldn't you think that you were kind of set? You know, at that point, wouldn't you think, okay, the tough part is over. We are going to be good. You know, anybody here ever nanny for other people's kids or do like extended babysitting? Okay, if you have, you know this, that when you nanny for someone's kids, especially if you nanny for rich kids, there's nothing better because when you nanny for rich kids, mom and dad foot the bill for everything. So if their kids are going to go to the pool during the summer or if their kids are going to go to movies or hang out or whatever fun stuff that they want their kids to experience, mom and dad are going to foot the bill for that. And mom and dad are going to guarantee that you've got the car seats. They're going to guarantee that you've got the resources. They're going to guarantee you've got the toys. Maybe they even provide a car for you to drive around because they're not going to let their kids be driven around without side airbags or, you know, whatever. You know, when you nanny for kids whose parents have got the money, you know you're taken care of because they care about their kids. And because they care about their kids, they're going to care about and protect the people who are taking care of their kids. And I would imagine if I were Joseph, you know, and if I were Mary, which I'm a dude, so I couldn't be, but if I were either of them, I would think to myself, okay, this is the Son of God. God's going to take care of us. You know, God's got this. He's going to protect us, and we're not going to go through any hard times. We've made it to Easy Street. You know, in a lot of ways, Jesus is our lotto ticket. We've really hit the jackpot here. But the opposite was actually true, because as soon as they settle in, a couple realities hit them. The first reality is this, is that he may be the Son of God, but he still poops and pees and cries, and we have to deal with those gross things. But in addition to that, Herod wants to kill our child, because he's afraid of losing power and control. So all of a sudden their life is completely flipped upside down. An angel appears and says, you guys need to run and you need to run for our lives. It's interesting to me that the angel doesn't appear to them and say this, that Herod wants to come and kill Jesus. He wants to kill your baby to protect his power. But don't be afraid because we are going to wipe the floor with him. You just sit here and chill and do whatever and we've got this thing covered. The angel didn't say that. In fact, the angel said, you need to run and you need to go and you need to hide. And Mary and Joseph followed those instructions and they fled hundreds and hundreds of miles from Israel to Egypt to live in a foreign land with foreigners, foreign government, foreign kings, until Jesus grew older and until Herod was finally out of the picture. And there's a couple things that we can take away from this story as it relates to the day after Christmas or the Christmas hangover. And the first one that I think is really important for us to know is this, is that, you know, whether or not Jesus comes into your life and how Jesus comes into your life, as people, we will face trials. You will face trials. It is a reality of life. You are going to face hard times. Bad things are going to happen. You're going to lose a job. Someone is going to get sick. You know, your car is going to break down. In life, we will face trials. And I know for a lot of us, you know, when we're looking for religious answers and we're looking for spiritual answers, and maybe you're here and, you know, you're not a Christian, you're not a follower of Jesus, and, you know, maybe you can relate to this because you've looked for answers all over and you've looked for the answers to the things that you struggle with and the challenges that you face in life, and you've looked for that thing that's just going to make those things stop happening. You've looked for that thing that'll make the bad stuff go away. I've got some bad news for you today. Jesus is not that thing that makes bad stuff stop happening in your life. There really is nothing that'll make that stuff stop happening because you will face trials in life. You will face speed bumps. You will face hard times. In fact, you know, when Jesus was an adult and he was teaching, some people asked him a question related to this. In John chapter 9, verses 1 through 3, it says that as Jesus was walking along, he saw a man who had been blind from birth. So he sees a guy who's been blind. He sees a guy who has an incredibly difficult life, who something horrible has happened to. Especially then, he's blind, he can't work, he has to rely on people to take care of him in a society where they don't have the resources the way that we do today. And Rabbi, his disciples asked him, so their teacher, they asked him a question: why was this man born blind? Was it because of his own sins or his parents' sins? So Jesus, this guy, he's obviously cursed, he's obviously going through a difficult time. Why? What did he do wrong? Did he do something wrong? Did his parents do something wrong? Was it some sort of sin in their life? Was there something that they could have fixed to keep him from being born blind? It was not because of his sins or his parents' sins, Jesus answered. And in Jesus' answer is this truth, is that he didn't do anything and his parents didn't do anything. In life, bad things are going to happen to people. You will face trials. And being the mother of Jesus, being the man who's going to raise Jesus, the Son of God, doesn't change that fact that in the world we live in, you will face trials. Now, many of you guys are like, all right, great word, Chris. I'm going to go home and I'm just going to cry for half an hour before I watch the Bears beat or lose to the Packers. I don't know, whichever you prefer today. We will face trials in life. It's just the reality of the world that we live in. And you know what? You could chalk those trials up to just the fact that people do bad things and people do stupid things. You know, maybe you've done stupid things that have put you in bad situations. You could chalk it up to the fact that we live in a sinful and a fallen world and the consequences of our sin, you know, have repercussions throughout. You will face trials. Hard times are going to come. That's the first thing. Second thing that we can get out of this story for Mary and Joseph, specifically about trials, is that trials have a way of perfecting our faith. Trials perfect our faith. Now, there's a big question as it relates to spiritual matters and even just philosophical matters, and that's this: why do bad things happen? Why do bad things happen to good people? And today, today is not really a time where I'm going to dive into a big answer for that. Why do bad things happen to good people? I can tell you, bad things are going to happen. And if you're a good person, bad things are going to happen to you because it's the world we live in. But I do know this, is that trials have a way of perfecting our faith. Trials have a way of bringing us closer into relationship with God and allowing God to fix things and transform things and change things in our life. And a lot of times those bad things that we go through that are sometimes our own fault, sometimes we make our own messes, right? And then the bad things that we go through in life are the cleanup of those messes that we've made. Anybody been in that position where it's like, okay, I made my bed and now I'm sleeping in it and it sucks? Well, a lot of times God allows those trials to happen in our lives because those trials are the very things that are going to fix the things in our lives that created those things. I just said those things a lot. Let me rephrase that. A lot of times the messes we make in life, God allows us to deal with the consequences of those messes to develop in us the character, to develop in us the integrity, and to develop in us the relationship and trust in him to make sure that those messes don't have to happen in our lives over and over and over again. James 1, 2 through 4, he writes, James is a guy, he was the first real leader of the church. He was, you know, for lack of a better word, he was kind of like the pope of the first church. He was kind of the head guy, and he writes to the church. He says, "Dear brothers and sisters, when troubles come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. So let it grow. For when your endurance is fully developed, you will be perfect and complete, needing nothing." Without necessarily knowing why those bad things have to happen in the first place, we can know this, is that when those trials come our way, when the Christmas hangover hits, when we have to flee to Egypt thinking that everything was going to be fine, but it's not, we can trust this, that God has a plan and a purpose in it, and that as we walk through that difficult season, that on the other end of it, in God, in Jesus, we're going to be better off than when we started. Romans 8, 28 through 29 puts it this way: "And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose for them." Everything that happens to us in our lives, that when we align our lives in Jesus' plan and his will for our lives, when we align our hearts to follow Jesus, it doesn't matter what happens, whether it's good or bad, that God can make those things work for the good. It says, "For God knew his people in advance, and he chose them to become like his son, so that his son would be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters." That those things have a way of making us more like Jesus when we walk through those trials. You will face trials in life, but trials perfect our faith. Trials have a way of making us better. And we're going to see how that happened in Mary and Joseph's life through the third thing. And that's this. It's that God will always see you through your trials. God will always see you through your trials when you are aligned in his purposes, when you're aligned in his will, and your eyes are firmly set on Jesus. Check this out in the life of Mary and Joseph in Matthew 2. Their story continues. They're in Egypt right now. It says, when Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt. So again, this angel keeps appearing to them. Get up, the angel said. Which, okay, this is just something I just recognized right now. Like, a couple times when the angel appears to Joseph, he's always waking him up. What the heck is up with that? Talk to me when I'm awake. Don't wake me up when I'm tired. Anyway, get up, the angel said. Take the child and his mother back to the land of Israel, because those who are trying to kill the child are dead. So an angel appears to Joseph and Mary. They've been living in Egypt. Let me give you a timeline on this. The timeline between when Jesus was born, historically, and the time where Herod died was about 6 years. So, and that's not in the Bible. That's in other historical records. Herod lived for 6 years beyond about the time that Jesus was born, which means that Mary and Joseph, they raised Jesus in a foreign land. Jesus' first and formative years were not in Israel. We're not with the Jewish people. Jesus' first formative years as a child were in Egypt, where they were hiding and fleeing for their lives. 6 to 7 years is how long Mary and Joseph spent in Egypt hiding from Herod. But you know what happened while they were in Egypt? God saw them through that trial. God walked them through it. In fact, it's interesting to me that we don't know a lot about Jesus's childhood after that time, that after he was born. The Bible doesn't tell us, the New Testament doesn't tell us a lot about the story between when he was born, just a couple little things. I think it's interesting that it doesn't. I also think it's pretty remarkable that it doesn't, because if there were things that happened in the life of Mary and Joseph and Jesus in Egypt where God did not see them through, if things had happened in Egypt where everything fell apart and you know, Joseph was like, I can't do this anymore. Mary, good luck with this baby that you say is God's, but now I can't even be sure because here we are in the middle of Egypt running for our lives and there's no way this can be true. I'm out. If any of that stuff had happened, we'd see it, we'd know it. And yet, what we see is this. An angel appeared to Joseph and said, go to Egypt, run for your life because Jesus' life is in danger. And then 6 years later, an angel appears to Joseph and says, get up. Go home, you're safe now because Herod is dead. And Mary and Joseph, who have been faithful, who have believed in this entire 6 to 7 year period, that even when they were going through hard times, they held firm to the fact that God was who he said he was, that God had done what he said he was going to do, and that God would continue to do what he promised. Because they held on to that, God saw them through this process, and 6 years later, they go home and they return to the land that they came from. And the reason that happened was because they had to face trials, that those trials perfected their faith, that allowed them to trust God and to lean on him more, and that through it all, that God saw them through. God carried them through. There's some passages that, you know, that come from the Old Testament. The New Testament is kind of the story of Jesus and beyond, the story of the church and kind of how, you know, the modern era of church of following Jesus is supposed to look. The Old Testament is this collection of Jewish writings and the Jewish religion that really looked forward to the coming of Jesus, and kind of everything pointed to his coming. And I imagine that some of these passages that had been written hundreds of years before Jesus were born resonated through Mary and Joseph's mind as they were in Egypt. Psalm 121, 3-4 says this of God, he will not let you stumble. The one who watches over you will not sleep. Indeed, he who watches over Israel never tires and never sleeps. There's never a moment when your life is committed to God, when you're committed to his purposes, that he ever takes his eyes off you. He never sleeps. I love that. I love that idea that God is always watching. He's like the chick from Monsters, always watching Wazowski. That's God always watching. Okay, God maybe probably doesn't sound like that, but the idea that God is, he's so aware of what's going on in your life, that you may be going through something today that is impossible. You may be going through a relational conflict. You may be going through a job transition. You may be going through something that seems insurmountable, but can I tell you, God sees you. God sees you in the same way that he saw Mary and Joseph hiding in Egypt. Deuteronomy 31:8 says this, "Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord will personally go ahead of you. He will be with you. He will never fail you or abandon you." Not only does God see you where you're at, but that he's walking in front of you. He's going ahead of you. Now, does that mean that you're being spared this trial? No, but it means this, that wherever you walk in this difficult season, God's walking ahead of you. He's clearing a path. He's making a way through the traps and through the mines that would threaten to derail you and make life difficult and make life worse, because God is with you walking this through you. And then finally, in 2 Corinthians 4:8-10, this is just such a great passage talking about where God is in our lives when we're going through difficult situations. It says this, "We are pressed on every side by troubles, but we are not crushed. We are perplexed. We're confused, but we're not driven to despair. We are hunted down, but never abandoned by God. We get knocked down, but we are not destroyed. Through suffering, our bodies continue to share in the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be seen in our bodies." We're pressed on every side, and the troubles are coming in from every angle, but we're not crushed by them. We're perplexed. We're confused. Things don't make sense. But even though things don't make sense, we're not driven to despair. I don't have to despair. You know, we're never abandoned by God. And it doesn't matter if we feel hunted down. It doesn't matter if we feel persecuted. It doesn't matter if we feel like everyone is against us in the world. We know that God is on our side. And the one thing that makes this true for every single one of us, and it made it true for Mary and Joseph, is this, is that Jesus was in the equation. Jesus was in the equation. The reason Mary and Joseph could be hunted down and chased and pursued but never abandoned by God is because of this simple fact, is because Jesus was with them. Jesus was there. Jesus was part of what was going on and happening in their lives. The reason that Mary and Joseph can say that we don't know what's going on, we don't understand why we have to run to Egypt and hide, the reason they could do that is because Jesus was with them. And can I tell you, the same is true for you and for me today, is that when you live a life where you have invited and allowed Jesus into what you do, into who you are, into what you want to become, then this can be you as well. You will face trials, but when Jesus is in the equation, those trials will have a way of perfecting your faith. Those trials have a way of making you better, making you more like him, allowing his power to be expressed in your life so that you can trust him more. And then when Jesus is there, you can know that God's going to carry you through those trials. You've been at that Christmas high in life, where things are good, and that almost can make things worse, right? Because you know how great things have been. You know how great things could be. And sometimes when you're at the bottom of the cliff, looking up at the top, at how great the view was from up there, it just makes how far you've fallen that much worse and that much more discouraging and painful. Because you're gonna face trials, but listen, with Jesus, those trials don't have to be empty. They can have a purpose. And not only that, you can know that when you go through that, that God will see you through those trials. Maybe this morning you're like Mary and Joseph and your relationship with Jesus is in its infancy. You know, this is all kind of new to you in the same way that it was all new to them. And, you know, a trial like they faced and maybe what you're facing today, just it's threatening to rock your world. And maybe you're thinking to yourself, maybe this Jesus thing is not all it was cracked up to be, because I expected to not have to go through these things anymore. The point is not that you will never go through hard times anymore. The point is this, is that you will never go through hard times again alone. You will never go through those things again alone, because Jesus is with you. And ultimately, the story of Christmas and the story of the day after Christmas is that when Jesus is with you, you never have to go through those things alone ever again. I'd like everybody to bow your heads and close your eyes. I'm going to talk to a couple groups in this room. The first group are the people in here who, you know, this whole church thing, this Jesus Christianity, this is something that is really new to you, and you know, you don't really know a lot about it. Maybe you've been a skeptic of all of this stuff. You know, maybe Christianity has just been a crutch, or something that you see weak people as needing. And I just want to tell you this, you know, you don't have to be weak to trust in the God who made you and has a plan and a purpose for your life. It doesn't make you strong to walk through the trials of life, trying to muscle through them and knuckle down and get through it all on your own, because God can take those trials and turn them from just meaningless effort and meaningless pain and turn it into something good in your life. And maybe today is that person who's, you know, you're not a follower of Jesus and you've tried everything and you're at the end of your rope, honestly. Maybe this last Christmas was the thing that broke the camel's back, the straw that broke the camel's back for you. And going through it, you know, you can look at your situation and your circumstances and you know that you are on the backside of a foreign nation with no friends, no family, and you feel alone and you feel lost and you're in it. God's message to you today is that this is why Jesus came, for you. And today, I want to give you the opportunity to respond to that. Jesus says that he's the light of the world, that he is the one who brings people to right relationship with God, that he has the ability to see your life fulfilled, that he created you for a purpose and a plan. And that begins by saying, you know what, Jesus? I want to start the journey of following you. And today, if that's you, and that if you're in this room and there's something speaking into your heart right now, can I tell you, that's God and he's drawing you. And you're ready to say, you know what, Chris? I don't know what it means. I don't know what it looks like. But today, I'm ready to turn a corner. And what I've done isn't working. And I'm ready to say this. I'm ready to start following Jesus. If that's you, just slip your hand up right now. Thank you. Thank you. He doesn't put your hands down. Maybe you're here and you are a follower of Jesus. You're a Christian. You have been for a long time, but you are in that Christmas hangover. You are in the day after Christmas right now. And God's done amazing things in your life, but you are in a valley and you're going through a hard time. And you just needed to be reminded of the fact that Jesus is with you. He will never leave you or forsake you. He will never abandon you. That even though you're pressed on every side, that you don't have to be crushed because God is walking ahead of you. He is before you. But we want to pray for you. We want to lift you up. If that's you today, you are going through that difficult situation. You are struggling and you need God to do something in your life. I just want to pray with you. If that's you, just slip your hand up right now. I need God to show himself and prove himself to me. Thank you. Thank you. You can put your hands down. Heavenly Father, I am so grateful for what you have done in our lives. And Jesus, I'm so thankful that you came and you didn't just come for a moment, but you came for a lifetime and you came for our lifetime, and that you have a plan for us and a purpose for us. And part of that is you walking beside us, walking with us. And so Lord, I pray, Jesus, first for those who lifted their hands to say, God, I'm your child, I'm a follower of yours, but I'm in the middle of it and I need your help, I need your strength. God, I pray, Lord, that the words out of the Bible would just be spoken and confirmed in their hearts, Lord, that no matter what they face, that God, it's for their good, that no matter what they're going through, God, that you can turn that from bad into positive in their lives, that you're going to use that to transform them and do a work in their lives, that they don't have to be confused, that they don't have to despair, that they don't have to worry, because their God never sleeps and never slumbers, and their God is going before them. And even though the journey might be hard, and even though the path might be difficult in this moment, that God, you are with them, that you are clearing a way for them, and that you would never leave them behind. God, I pray that you would speak that in their hearts right now. God, I pray with those who've lifted their hands to say, you know what? I'm ready to start a journey of knowing Jesus. I'm ready to take that first step of following him. I don't know what it means. I don't know what it looks like. But God, I pray with them this prayer. God, I pray, Jesus, that what we've tried isn't working for us. God, that we've struggled and tried to make life right. We've struggled and tried to get through these trials on our own, but it's not working, God. And at the point where we can barely lift our heads anymore, God, we reach a hand out to you, Jesus, and say, please help us. God, we know we are not perfect. We know that we are sinners. We know that we have done things that have maybe even created the mess in our lives, God, and we confess that to you. We confess, Lord, that we can't do it on our own, and Jesus, that we need you. And we ask you to come into our lives And we ask you to take us by the hand and begin leading us to wherever it is that you want us to go and to whoever it is that you want us to be and whatever it is you want to do in our lives, because everything else we've trusted has failed us and we're putting our hope and our trust in you. Today, Jesus, we are now yours. Jesus, thank you so much for this Christmas season, and I thank you ultimately that you love us enough to come and be with us, to change our lives, to bring us hope. And we love you, God. We pray all of this in your name. Amen.
Thank you for joining us at Compass. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you have any questions about Compass or this message, contact us at our website, www.compassbn.com.